There's so much to talk about when it comes to May Day. First, it's kind of a pagan holiday with Celtic roots from antiquity. The Maypole at Marymount, written by Nathaniel Hawthorne in the 1830s about events in Massachusetts back in the 1630s, reveals this tension which prevails across American history between joyful nature worshipers and, in that story, John Endicott, Miles Standish, and the armed and loaded Puritans who marched up from Plymouth to cut down the Maypole in Braintree, Massachusetts. A kind of mean-spirited bunch of scolds and some kind of hippie-like playful souls. And a tension between them has existed in American history from the very first days. So there's the pagan Maypole dance and its corollaries. And then in the 19th century, as labor movements grew, May 1st was chosen by trade unionists to celebrate labor and the dignity of working people. Dolores Huerta, held up in this morning's Story for All Ages, exemplifies workers' May Day celebrations. Bellicose military parades replete with megaton missiles in Moscow and other 20th century communist regimes led our president Dwight D. Eisenhower to counter by declaring May 1st National Law Day. So in one day, we have three elements oddly connected and all being celebrated: pagan exuberance, solidarity and union among working people, even for some revolutionary aspirations, and then legal stability and order exemplified by the law. Oh yes, and then there's one more: May Day, May Day, an international radio signal word used by airplanes and ships in distress. From the French, Venez Mayday, come help me. So it seems appropriate to use Mayday as a title for a brief homily on how imperiled is our American ship of state and spaceship Earth too. Mayday, Mayday. It took my brother-in-law 3 years to finally admit it, but he told me 2 weeks ago, Republican notwithstanding, he now thinks President Trump is in over his head. Perhaps Mr. Trump was not paying attention when he ran for office, or maybe he doesn't care about violating longstanding presidential norms, releasing one's taxes, divestiture of personal assets, and protocols against nepotism, having administration officials testify under oath before Congress. But the way it all comes across to me is simple. Donald Trump brings no dignity to the presidential office. He trashes and seeks to humiliate those with whom he disagrees, and he is never conciliatory. One of my high school coaches, Donald Moulton, had a formula he wanted us all to follow. In victory, act like a gentleman, he said. In defeat, act like a man. But Mr. Trump does neither. He rules by distraction, obfuscation, and propaganda. And it gets worse as time goes on. The perfect pitch man, he distracts us with histrionics, while paying off the Republican donor class, the top 1 to 0.001% of the population, with massive tax and regulatory relief. Does Mr. Trump really understand the articles and sections of the Constitution he's sworn to uphold, protect, and defend? If we give him another 4 years in the Oval Office, I honestly think our government of checks and balances may well be checkmated into a corner and collapse, or fall prey to opportunistic terrorists or yet another opportunistic virus. I pray nightly that it be otherwise. For weeks, Mr. Trump shamelessly downplayed and belittled the growing contagion until it's now revealed to be serious. Then suddenly he starts acting like he was sounding an alarm the whole time, routinely begging all questions about testing availability. He makes a bad situation even worse. But what, after all, did the American population expect? Donald Trump is not a government-schooled person who was a governor before or understands our civics. He was and remains really a reality TV impresario. That's his training, not running a government. Mayday, mayday. Political leadership requires clarity, adroitness, and first of all, the ability to get everybody singing from the same sheet. But that is not President Trump's style. He's a believer in and a virtuoso of divide and conquer, which he has used very effectively politically. But the novel coronavirus is a novel kind of problem. And try as he might, Mr. Trump and his apparatchik cohort cannot use his familiar divide and conquer political tactics. They won't work. Tearing down, blaming, and condemning enemies are political tactics. But this contagion is not a political problem. It's a common problem. And it can only be solved by common approaches and common means. To solve pandemics, our country needs everyone to pull together, something that's apparently beyond Mr. Trump's purview, understanding, or capacity. Give the president credit where credit is due. He knows how to divide and conquer as well as anyone. But gather together and lead the people as one people, on that score, he's not so good. Mayday, mayday, mayday. The crisis is actually more than only problem in the older Oval Office. Even if, come November 3rd, we fix the immediate catastrophe of a president far over his head, that's only the beginning. All that means is an end to presidential denials of global warming, species extinction, habitat loss, deforestation, and the whole ecological disaster. Shelter-in-place orders across the country, across the whole world, have revealed a planet free of factories, cars, and jet streams. Whatever our post-pandemic world is going to look like, the perils of hyperdevelopment and the fragility of the global economy make an ecologically sustainable future a lot more imaginable for a lot more people. What will our global future look like? A world of militant oligarchs fending off the growingly desperate poor? Or one more cooperative, more community-based, and more democratic? Well, I definitely vote for the latter. Our whole Unitarian Universalist movement votes for the latter and has for over two centuries. We have embraced a progressive, democratic stance from the days of abolition to women's suffrage, LGBTQ rights, and many other efforts to broaden and expand human rights. Our Sunday schools have used child-centered curricula since the 1930s, seeking to kindle the natural sense of wonder and curiosity in our children, a sense that will alert them to the miracles of life that abound at their fingertips. And we teach our children critical thinking skills that will challenge their hearts and imaginations to recognize and nurture the common good. Today, we celebrate May Day. We celebrate the world of nature bursting forth everywhere with color, fragrance, and beauty. We celebrate solidarity among people the world over, striving for security and opportunity to live in peace. In the words of Uruguayan Eduardo Galeano, sometimes I recognize myself in others. I recognize myself in those who will endure, friends who will shelter me, beautiful holy fools for justice and flying creatures of beauty and others. And when I recognize myself in them, I am the air coming to know myself as part of the wind. So we celebrate solidarity, imagination, and love. We celebrate as well the revolutionary aspirations of terrorized and dispossessed people everywhere. And finally, on this day, also known as National Law Day, we celebrate the principle in America that no one is above the law. Our country, our whole world is seething with underlying tensions between races, between religions, between Puritans and libertines, between developed and undeveloped countries. These tensions can be stoked in such ways as to gain power over others. But that's been going on for far too long already. Mayday, mayday. Another option, one we've been holding up in worship services and teaching our children and youth in Sunday school for decades now. We can align ourselves, as it says in our purposes and principles, with the forces that create and uphold life. This is relational power. Not power over, but power in wholesome relationship. It's spiritual power too. Satyagraha, Mahatma Gandhi's soul force, as distinct from the brute force exemplified by President Trump. Relational power is the real power that makes communities whole and harmonious and hearts at peace. The force, as the poet Dylan Thomas put it, that through the green stem drives the flower. Let us celebrate that magnificent force. And with joy and thanksgiving, let us celebrate the liberating, healing power of love. Oh, my soul. Oh, my soul. Amen.